drive time now.
Welcome to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Tribe Talk is brought to you by Cleveland Clinic. Access the number one care in Ohio anytime, anywhere. By Subway, the official training restaurant of the Cleveland Indians. By KeyBank, the banking home of the Cleveland Indians.
Everyone, welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where the Indians are in the midst of a new homestand. The White Sox here this weekend, and then the Los Angeles Dodgers coming to town next week, starting a three-game series Tuesday night. So a lot of good baseball coming up this week here at Progressive Field. As the Tribe tries to get it rolling, they were coming off a 1-4 road swing that saw them go to Kansas City and Colorado and struggle mightily, but they were off to a good start last night, Friday night, here at Progressive Field. And coming up on this week's show, a variety of guests for you. Brad Grant will join us. He's the Indians' director of amateur scouting, and he's in charge of putting together the drafts, something that has been the lifeblood of this team as they continue to build their talent base, a talent base that got them to Game 7 of the World Series a year ago. Also coming up on this week's show, the Weekly Farm Report. James Harris will join us. He's the Indians' Director of Player Development. We will also hear from Indians reliever Dan Otero, who's having another solid season as a member of the outstanding Indians bullpen. And when we come back, it is a look at the week gone by, coming up on Tribe Talk, right here on the Cleveland Clinic Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where the Indians are in the middle of a weekend series with the Chicago White Sox. It began on Friday night. Indians coming away with a solid victory. And taking a look at the week gone by, only two wins to talk about. Sunday in Kansas City, the Indians taking on the Royals, trying to salvage Game 3 of a three-game series. They had dropped the first two and did not look good doing it. And Terry Francona had told Tom Hamilton on Indians warm-up that he needed the team to really start playing a lot better than they had been in many different areas.
I have enjoyed this team so much, so I don't want to just go overboard when you get frustrated. But I want to see us fight more, because that's one of the qualities, like last year, that I admired so much. You're not always going to hit. You know, we're not hitting with runners in scoring position. Very few of our guys. I think those things are trends, and they trend the other way at some point. But until then, we better fight harder, and we better fight together, or it's going to be hard for us. It's going to be harder than we want it to be.
Well, it turned out they played one of their better games on Sunday afternoon in Kansas City, an 8-0 win over the Royals. And they got it going early. Second inning, Roberto Perez was able to put the Tribe in front.
He delivers to the Indians catcher, who sends a line drive up the alley in left center. This is trouble. It'll roll and go to the wall, and it'll clear the bases. Encarnacion and Jackson will both score, and a huge two-run double to left center by Roberto Perez. That's the biggest hit of the season for Perez. His second double, and it gives him 8 RBIs on the year, and it gives the Indians a 2-0 lead and a much-needed jolt from the bottom of the order.
Also in the second inning, the Indians got a contribution from their backup outfielder, Daniel Robertson, who got a start on Sunday and came up big.
The next offering to Robertson A swing and a line drive base hit down the right field line, headed toward the corner. That'll score Perez. Kipnis on his way to third. He's being waved home. On his way to third is Robertson. He's in a rundown. Kipnis scores. Robertson's tagged out near third, but he gets the job done with a two-out, two-run double down the right field line and into that corner.
After a Jason Kipnis sacrifice fly in the fourth inning made it 5-0, Robertson struck again.
Two down, runners on the corners here in the fourth inning. The pitch to him. Swung on, line drive, center field, base hit, Daniel Robertson. He drives in another run as Zimmer scores from third, and the Indians now lead it 6-0. How about that? A 3-RBI day for Robertson as he's now 2-for-3 with that RBI single here in the fourth inning, and here comes Ned Yost. That's going to be it for Travis Wood.
Then in the eighth inning, it was Jason Kipnis that put the Tribe up 8-0.
Kipnis with a ground out, a walk, and then almost hit a grand slam. With the bases loaded in the fourth, he pounded one to deep right, and Jorge Bonifacio made a nice catch right before the wall, and it went for a long sac fly. 3-1 pitch. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to right center field. Bonifacio won't catch this baby. Gone to the fountains, splashing into the water. And the Indians lead it 8-0 on Jason Kipnis' prodigious home run to right center. Boy, that's one of the longest home runs Kipnis may have ever hit. It's his 7th home run. And did he put a charge into that on a day where right now the flags aren't moving at all? Holy cow, that's a long way out into those fountains in right center field.
Meanwhile, the pitching was outstanding, and it had to be mainly out of the bullpen. As Trevor Bauer started, but with a rain delay in the second inning, his day came to an end, so it was truly a bullpen day from that point forward. Andrew Miller was his usual solid self in the eighth inning.
His 2-2. Swing and a miss. Miller strikes out the side. He is something else, folks. Indians 8, Royals nothing. 8 innings in the books.
And Cody Allen finished up the shutout in the ninth.
Cody Allen's ready. Here it comes. And Brandon Moss swings and misses at a curve down and in. Strikes out. Ball game. And the Indians are able to salvage the finale here in Kansas City. A game that saw a 1-hour and 50-minute rain delay, but it didn't slow the Indians down. They rout the Royals today by a final score of 8-0.
So it was Bauer at the start, then Dan Otero, Zach McAllister, Brian Shaw, Miller, and Allen combining on the shutout. On Monday, we had a chance to visit with Dan Otero and talk to him about contributing after a rain delay, especially after a tough day on Saturday. He was one of many Indians pitchers who gave up runs in a 12-5 Royals victory, but he says that's just the nature of working out of the bullpen and being ready from day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you said it. Baseball's a very fluid sport, and each day presents new challenges. So if you let, you know, the night before, the game before kind of linger, it just can snowball into a bad stretch, whether it's for the team or for yourself individually. And Saturday, our game there in Kansas City was obviously none too pleasant to watch or probably be a part of. And it was nice to be able to come back the next day, and our offense put some runs on the board early, and we were able to hold them at bay the rest of the game.
When you look at a day like you had Sunday, 16 pitches get you 2-plus innings, and the Indians needed that. Do you kind of shake your head when you look back at that afterward and say, oh, man, that was pretty good?
Yeah, 100%. It was one of those things where they're swinging early in the count. That's kind of their M.O. anyway, and instead of fouling pitches off, they're hitting the ball into the ground, and we're making plays. The day before, I think I threw 30 pitches and couldn't get out of an inning. You know, so that's how crazy this game is, and, you know, each day is different, and, you know, whether they swing at every pitch, they could foul off every pitch and you could still be in the count, or they could swing at the pitches and put them in play right away. So it's just, you know, you never know what to expect. You just try to keep making pitches, and unfortunately I was able to get some innings there, and you know, the rest of our bullpen did a good job.
You always have a good perspective on how this game works and results and things like that. Last year a great year for you statistically. This year the numbers are a little bit up, but still very valuable in the role that you're in. How do you look at say, a last year and put that behind you and still feel good about what you're doing this year contributing?
Yeah, you try to put last year behind you as much as possible, whether it's the team putting last year behind us or, you know, me individually putting it behind me. But I can always look back on it and be like, okay, I can do that, and I can have success. So if there's ever any doubt that enters my mind, I can always look back, no, I did it for a full season, you know. So that's where it helps. But at the same time, you just have to go out there and control what you can control. You can't control whether a ball put in play is going to be caught or not. And I'm not a big strikeout guy, so I know I'm going to give up my hits, and they're going to lead to some runs. And I'm really happy with the way I'm throwing right now. I feel like I'm throwing the ball well. As a whole, the results, this number's maybe not great, but I still think I'm pitching well. And, you know, it's a long season, so if I can continue to do that, maybe at the end of the year, it could be another good year.
You always rely on the good sink. If it goes away for a day or two, how do you get it back, and what do you look for to try and get that thing going again?
You hope it doesn't go away, or you throw 30 pitches in an inning so you're really tired, and then the next day, no matter what you do, it's going to sink, either by gravity or by tiredness. So, you know, that's the other thing I can do. I had an old coach tell me that. He's like, you need to go run miles and get your legs tired, so when you go out there, the ball sinks more. I'm like, I don't want to do that. No, you just try to, you know, no matter what you do in throwing program or in the bullpen before the game, you have to trust that your stuff's going to be there out in the game, and you don't ever want to shy away from it. So, you know, if the sink's not there one day, then you just try to keep going until you get it.
And Brian Shaw always is very good about maybe taking the ball on days where he feels just okay. And you mentioned being a little sore after Saturday. But what's the key there to being able to do that, and what does that mean to the rest of the team when you can do that?
Well, I think it's a mindset relievers have to have, and it was something that I was taught when I first made my debut 6 years ago with the Giants, and the relievers were like, you have to be ready to pitch every day. I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, no matter what, you have to be able to pitch every day. That's what is expected of you in the big league bullpen. I was like, all right. So you learn how to manage your throws, whether it's, you know, you're warming up and you get dry hump twice and not put into the game, or you warm up twice in the bullpen and then pitch four innings later in the game, just throw an inning, you have to be ready the next day. So it's something you really have to monitor, and our athletic training staff here does a tremendous job to make sure anything we need done, they will do for us to make sure we're ready to pitch.
Well, Dan, it was good work over the weekend. I know a lot of work over the weekend, but thanks a lot for coming by. I appreciate it.
No problem, Rosie. Thank you very much.
Well, after the series in Kansas City, it was on to Colorado and Denver to take on the Rockies, and it was a rough 2 days for the Indians. Tuesday, an 11-3 Rockies victory, and then Wednesday, an 8-1 win for Colorado. And the Indians ended the road trip 1-4 and had an unhappy manager in Terry Francona, who was not pleased with the effort of his ball club.
You know what? It's baseball's baseball, and they took it to us twice, and we're going to have to figure out a way to start. You know, this potentially, this team is too good. We're not showing it right now. We're going to. One way or another, we're going to. But, you know, we're not putting ourselves in a position where, you know, it's like we have to hope some nights. We need to go out and play the baseball we know how to play and dictate the pace of the game.
After an off day Thursday, much needed, the Indians were back at it on Friday night, and they came up big over the White Sox with a 7-3 win. The Tribe got it going early, first inning, thanks to Michael Brantley.
Gonzalez is ready. Here it comes. And Brantley swings and lines a base hit into left center. Hitting third is Kipnis. He'll come home. Here's Cabrera's throw to the plate. It's over the head of everybody to the backstop. Scoring is Kipnis. In the second is Brantley. Indians with a 1-0 lead.
The Sox would take a lead of 2-1 in the third inning, but Bradley Zimmer came up big defensively for the Tribe to keep the White Sox from extending the lead.
1-1 game, 2-1, 1-out. He bangs it back up the middle, base hit center field. Cabrera being waved home. Here comes the throw to the plate by Zimmer on the slide, the tag. Got him at the plate! Bradley Zimmer has gunned down Melky Cabrera, trying to score from second base on the single to center by Abisail Garcia. Bradley Zimmer's throw right on the money.
Meanwhile, Corey Kluber was battling through, and he looked especially sharp in the fourth. Kluber's into the wind. Here comes his 1-2 delivery. Fastball called strike three. Boy, he took it right down the middle, belt high, and Kluber has struck out his seventh. He strikes out the side in the fourth inning. Bottom of the fourth inning, Tribe still trailing. Zimmer
came up with the bases loaded and drew a huge walk in a tremendous at-bat.
Zimmer waiting on a seventh pitch in this at-bat from Gonzalez. The set and the pitch. Inside, ball four. Tie ball game as Encarnacion comes down the line from third, and we are tied at two. What a great at-bat by Bradley Zimmer. A plate appearance that ends in a walk. He fell behind 0-2, worked it to 3-2, fouled off a pitch, and then took an inside pitch for ball four.
Well, the White Sox would score again in the top half of the fifth inning. They made it a 3-2 ball game, but in the bottom half of the fifth inning, Edwin Encarnacion did something that the Indians brought him to Cleveland for. That was a huge home run.
The 0-1. Swung on, and there's a high fly ball, dead center, way back, home run, Encarnacion. Oh my, that was through the trees and maybe to Heritage Park. And that's what the Indians are looking for from Encarnacion. He turns this game around. 4-3 Tribe. Number 11 for Encarnacion. And it puts the Indians back in front.
So the Tribe was in front 4-3, and then it was Miller time. Andrew Miller in the seventh and eighth innings.
Here is the set and the 2-2 from Andrew Miller. Swing and a weak pop. Shallow right center. Kipnis backpedaling. The second baseman reaches up, one-hands it, and Andrew Miller. He made 30 pitches tonight in two innings. But I think you see the sense of urgency that manager Terry Francona has about this game and getting this homestand started off on the right foot. Corey Kluber goes the first six. Andrew Miller 7-8. It'll be Cody Allen in the ninth, and the Indians will try to give him a little breathing room.
Then in the bottom half of the eighth inning, the Indians opened up the lead as Lonnie Chisenhall continued his fine season.
Petrichka checks second, the pitch. Swung on, a shot to right. Down the line it goes. Fair ball into the corner. On his way to second is Chisenhall. Heading home is Robertson. Pulling up at third is Ramirez. And there's another big RBI hit from Lonnie Chisenhall. His second double tonight, and the Indians have a 5-3 lead.
And Yan Gomes came through with a big base hit.
Here's Yan Gomes, infield in. Gomes lines it. Base hit left field. Ramirez scores. Chisenhall around third. He scores. And Yan Gomes comes through with a two-run single to left. That'll break this baby open. The Indians now lead it 7-3. Four straight hits off Jake Petrichka. And Yan Gomes has 15 RBIs on the year.
And in the end, it was Cody Allen to finish things up.
Allen looks back, now fires. A swing, a little dribbler to the right of the mound. Allen gloves it. Glove flip to first. Santana kicked the bag for the out. He throws home, but no need to. Ball game.
So a positive finish to the ball game heading into the weekend for the Tribe. They won it 7-3 on Friday night against the White Sox, with two more games to go against Chicago this weekend. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll hear from Indians Director of Amateur Scouting, Brad Grant. The draft comes your way on Monday. The Indians will try and replenish the farm system and keep that pipeline of talent moving to the major leagues. And it starts with the amateur draft. Brad fills us in after this timeout on the Cleveland Clinic Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where the Indians have an off day Monday for the team, but the other team for the Indians will be extremely busy, and that is the members of the scouting department, the front office, all the way up to Chris Antonetti, the president of baseball operations, and on down. It is the 2017 amateur draft. And a different draft this year for the Indians. As Brad Grant, the Indians Director of Amateur Scouting, explains, the Indians do not have a first-round pick due to the signing of Edwin Encarnacion this offseason, but he's still excited about what could be on draft day 2017.
Yeah, Rosie, it's still a very exciting time for us and for our scouts, and the draft's in 2 weeks, June 12th, so we're ramping up right now. All the scouts are coming into Cleveland and excited to have them in here. This year, our first pick is until the second round. We pick 64, and then 71, and then 102 are our picks this year. We would have picked 24, but with the signing of Edwin Encarnacion, we lose that 24th pick to the Toronto Blue Jays in compensation for signing him.
So when you look at preparing for this year's draft, because of where you pick and how different it is from years past, do you approach it differently or do you still stay the same?
No, we stay the same. If you look at what our scouts have done over the course of the past years, we've been able to acquire players all the way through the draft. So it's not just our first-round selections that we concentrate on. We have players like Cody Allen and Sharon Armstrong and Ryan Merritt and all these guys, Roberto Perez, that come later in the draft too. So we approach it the same way. It's a collective process for us. It's try to get the best player for the Cleveland Indians, and we feel like we can do that anywhere in the draft.
And you mentioned trying to get the best player, and probably different from other sports. Does it make any sense in baseball to draft based on need because of the amount of time it takes for a player to make it to the major leagues?
Yeah, no. If you look at our past drafts, we've taken a bunch of outfielders. We've gone sequentially with the best player available every time at that spot. So needs change all the time, and major league needs change all the time. So what we want to do is just acquire the best players and get the most players into our system and build that depth to our system the best we possibly can.
Brad Grant joining us, Indians Director of Scouting. You look at this year's draft, and can you characterize it with a top-heavy or a lot of good depth, anything like that?
Yeah, every time I get that question, I always say, you know, it's top-heavy on high school position players this year, and then we draft four college guys. So I think for us, it's take the best player, what's ever there. There's good players all the way through the draft, whether they're high school pitchers, position players, college pitchers, college position players. We're going to take the best player.
And as you go about it and your scouts are out there, for fans who don't know, areas of the country that seem to be exceptionally strong, where do you try and focus sometimes just based on what you're seeing?
Yeah, I spend a lot of my time in California, Texas, and Florida. So those are the strong beds. They play baseball year-round down there. But at the same time, if you look around, Major League Baseball players come from all around the country. Players come all through the world. So we do a really good job. Our scouts do a really good job of covering the entire country. We have 25 guys out there. We have 17 area scouts who cover each region, and we're looking to find talent wherever it is.
And can you say whether there's more really good talent in high school or if a lot of it has filtered onto the college level this season?
Yeah, it's evenly split. I mean, every year you walk into it and there's some really good high school players and there's some really good college players. So I don't think there's one way or the other it leans this year.
So between now and the draft, what's going on here? How many meetings and getting the scouts in, things like that?
A lot of meetings. Our guys have worked really hard, though. What we do is we try to pull our voice, pull our experience, pull our passion out for 362 days, and then go and have the best collective draft that we possibly can. And our guys have done an exceptional job of doing that. They started last year on June 13th, and they've worked all the way up through until June 11th, and then we'll hit the ground running on the 12th.
And you've been at this a while now. This is several drafts that you've been in charge of. Has it changed much during your time at the head of the draft in terms of how you go about it, or do you try and keep it somewhat similar to what's been working?
Yeah, we've had a lot of continuity and consistency in what we've done and who we are. We have a lot of guys who've scouted with us for a long, long time. Scott Barnsby, Scott Meany, John Mirabelli, Bob Mayer, Mike Soper, they've all been with us for a long time, and we've created that continuity and consistency to how we approach it. And then as we get through it, we make sure that we stay with our process. We try to remove our bias and emotion when we go to make decisions and make the best decision collectively for the Cleveland Indians.
I know at one point in time this season, I think there were 11 of the 25 players on the Major League roster were drafted and developed by the Cleveland Indians. For fans who may not know what that means, that seems like a high number. From your perspective, is it?
Yeah, it's a tribute to, like I said, to our scouts first and foremost for working that hard and finding those guys and being able to evaluate and identify those guys all the way through the draft. And then it's what we've done on the player development side too. So I think there were 14 players that were drafted and developed last year, contributed to the American League Championship and played in the World Series. And 22 of the 25 guys were either acquired through pro scouting, international scouting, amateur scouting, and spent time in our development system. So it's a collective process for all of us. All of us work hand in hand in what we're doing, and it's paying off.
All right, Brad, good luck next couple of weeks. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Rosie.
That's Indians Director of Amateur Scouting, Brad Grant. This is his World Series.
the draft day for the Tribe, as they will bring in 40-some-odd players into the system and try and get them all signed and in the minor league camps as soon as possible, with the short season teams in Mahoning Valley and the Arizona Summer League beginning in the next week or so. So a lot going on Monday here, as the draft will be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll visit with James Harris. He's the Indians' Director of Player Development. The weekly farm report coming your way next on the Cleveland Clinic Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland this weekend, where the Indians are playing the White Sox. And don't forget, the Dodgers come to town next week. A rare appearance in Cleveland for one of baseball's most famous franchises, the Los Angeles Dodgers. And they're coming to town, and we don't have confirmation yet, but there is a possibility that the pitching matchup on Wednesday night will feature Cy Young Award winners Corey Kluber for the Indians and the great Clayton Kershaw for the Los Angeles Dodgers. We don't have confirmation yet on Kershaw, but it's lining up that way as a possibility. So we'll see. We'll keep you posted on our game broadcast for sure. Well, each week we hear from James Harris, the Indians' Director of Player Development, the weekly farm report. And this week, James and his department, they've been in meetings with the Indians' amateur scouts in the front office getting ready for the draft on Monday. And James says, in many ways, the draft is that new introduction to a player that may potentially be entering the system. So a lot of players to look at, and there is involvement from the player development front when talking about selections.
In many ways, it's a new introduction to players who could potentially be entering the system. It allows me to get an understanding of what their strengths and weaknesses are, what their backgrounds are, what they've been exposed to, and how we can help them develop into major league players once they enter our system.
And when you look at specifics, obviously you don't know who the specific players are going to be. How big an inventory of players are you talking about here over the last couple of days?
Hundreds. definitely spending all day, every day, talking about players one by one, really in depth. Our scouts do a fantastic job of getting all the information so we can pull it together and make educated decisions on who makes good Cleveland Indians. Not everyone can be a Cleveland Indian. There are certain guys out there, and this allows us to figure out who those guys are.
And when you look at a certain player, say he's tall and slender, and obviously you're looking at projecting someone, especially a high school kid who may have a lot of growing yet to do, how much input do you have there, especially with some of the others in the department who work on things like growth and development?
Yeah, we talk about a few hypotheticals to say, if we took a guy like that, how would we help him develop? How long do we think it will take? And what types of things will we do to get him there? So it helps in the decision-making to say, if I take a player who's underdeveloped physically, do we have the ability to help him reach his potential within the system? And those are a lot of things that we get asked, and we'd like to contribute.
And when you look at the draft being next week, did you have any familiarity with any of the players whose names have come up over the past year or so that scouts might have talked about much sooner than just this week?
Yeah, I spent some time with about 150 high school players over the course of the year. So I had been exposed to them, spent a lot of time in California, which is where I'm from. So I got to see a lot of games out there. And I mean, if you love baseball, you get to see baseball at all levels. So I get to see it from the high school level all the way up to the major league level, and was fortunate enough to be able to see some high school players.
James Harris joining us, talking draft here. It starts Monday night. The Indians do not have a first-round pick, but as we have seen in years past, it's the rounds after that can really go a long way toward making it a quality roster at the major league level. Taking a look at some activity in the system, we'll take just a brief look at Lake County this week, and Connor Capel is a name that we saw during the course of Major League spring training. He had an opportunity to come over to Major League camp and play in some games. And it sounds like he's really taken a nice step forward at a young age in the Midwest League. And what are you seeing there from Connor?
Yeah, last week he was actually honored by the Midwest League as Player of the Week. He's a guy who comes up to the plate with a purpose and tries to do damage on the ball. And he's done well in the field also, enough to be recognized by the league. We were really excited about what he brought this year. He was a fifth-round pick in 2016. So all the players that you see impacting us don't just come in the first round. They come through all the rounds, and we're excited that he got a chance and an opportunity and made the most of it.
and a high school player who's only 20, yet he's in a full season league already, and it's not uncommon, but what are the challenges that a young player like that can face, this being just his second year of pro ball?
Well, the main challenge is the day before he was in pro ball, he was living at his parents' house. So being able to come to the Cleveland Indians organization, you basically become a man really quickly because you have to wake up yourself. You have to we feed him and we help to help them develop. But they're in charge of their career, and we partner with them to help them get better. Now he's in a full season club in a city that isn't the city that he grew up in. So those outside influences affect what he does on a daily basis, and he's come like a professional. He says, yeah, he's only 20 years old, but 20 years old for this guy, he's a grown man, and he comes like a pro every day.
And you mentioned the transition they have to make. They're living at home one day, and then they're playing pro ball the next. I know in Arizona, mm-hmm. there's a little more control over things because it's at the spring training complex. They get to the Midwest League, though, Lake County. They're a little more on their own, aren't they?
They are a little bit. In Arizona, a majority of the games are played within 45 minutes of our complex. So those players sleep in their bed every night. And we have a manager down there, Anthony Medrano, that does a great job of being kind of a father figure for those guys, preparing them for that full season club. So when they get to the full season, they know exactly what to expect and how to carry themselves to be professionals. So when they get there with our manager, Larry Day, he just takes over from there. That's more of a college-type atmosphere. Those guys are somewhere between 20 and 22 years old, and they're getting after it every day, trying to get better.
And a pitching name that has jumped out, Ryder Ryan. What do you have on him as he's developed this season?
Yeah, he was actually a position player in college and didn't pitch very much. Converted over to being a pitcher, and in his first season of being with a full season club, has been selected to the All-Star game. So we share in congratulating him. We're really excited about his growth and his development, and as he's matured, he's been honored externally. For the things that he's done, and we're really excited. We saw that all along, but now we're glad that people outside the organization are seeing it too.
Well, good stuff, James. Always a pleasure, and enjoy the draft. I know it's going to be a lot of excitement and new players coming into the system. Thanks for the time today.
Thank you very much. Great time of the year.
That's James Harris, the Indians Director of Player Development, talking draft here on Tribe Talk. And we'll continue with our final segment after this timeout on the Cleveland Clinic Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Don't forget night baseball on Saturday night, Indians and White Sox at 7:15, and Sunday afternoon, a 1:10 first pitch, the Tribe and the White Sox. And don't forget, on Sunday afternoon, it's a KeyBank Kids Fun Day. Kids 12 and under get the wiffle ball and bat set, courtesy of Major League Baseball, so that should be a lot of fun. Bring the kids out on Sunday. Supposed to be great weather as well. Well, we finish up with Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio. He has another Tribe tale here on Tribe Talk.
Long drive, left field, way back, and they will watch it go. A grand slam home run.
Ground ball, 1 second. Jerry Brown has it. The short one out. Back to first, double play. Game is over.
It's time for another Tribe Tale with Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio.
Joining me now is former Indians outfielder Richie Sheinbloom. And Richie, it's great to have a chance to catch up with you, sir. And please update our fans and where you're living these days and what you're up to.
I'm up to about 235. And I live in Palm Harbor, Florida, which is in the Tampa Bay area.
Right.
And I found that the weather there is a little better for my joints that have pretty much passed away on me.
Let's talk a little baseball. You signed with the Cleveland Indians in 1964. Reflect on your early days of your career.
When I signed out after I graduated college, and I was sent to Burlington in a Carolina League, and I hit at 309. And actually, the next year, I got sent down from B-ball to C-ball.
For hitting 309.
But in 65, I was protected. And Cleveland had me up with a big team for 30 days in the beginning, 30 at the end. I had one at bat. Bertie told me I was too young to play in the big leagues. And the one thing I really remember, Dave Morehouse, Morehead, threw a no-hitter against us in Boston. I'm the only one that didn't play on either team. Horrible.
You were admittedly were known in your career as a slow starter. And I remember as a kid, a headline in the Plain Dealer atop one of Rush Snyder's batting around columns where it said Scheinblum, O for April, and the O was spelled O-H. Is my memory correct? Were you really a slow starter?
That season I started 0 for 35, which is still a major league record. And it followed me winning the Triple Crown in spring training. And as it turns out, I had the lowest batting average in the history of the Cleveland scoreboard when I got my first hit.
So that had to be, I'm not a good mathematician, but something like
0-1-4 or something like that.
Oh.
And what happened was we opened up in Detroit, and I was hitting third, Tony Horton hitting fourth.
Right.
And we faced Denny McLean right after he won 31 games. I'd never faced him before. And I watched him warm up. He was throwing nothing. So I came up to play. It couldn't have been more than 6 degrees out. He threw me a mediocre fastball. I went to swing, and it was by me in a second. It just exploded. That was 0 for 4, but he didn't strike me out. Second night, Mickey Lolich, I'd never faced. 17 different speeds on a slider, another 0 for 4. And then I forget who the third one was. And then Alvin traded for Hawk Harrelson. And then I just started pinch hitting once a week. And someone recently figured out that they deducted all of my April statistics. And for the other 7 years, well, for the 8 years in baseball, my career average was 311 or 309.
Well, Sherry, I also read a crazy story about you and the cycle. And normally the cycle is when a hitter gets a single, double, triple, and home run all in the same game, but your cycle was a little bit different.
It was called the reverse cycle. As far as I know, I'm the only one that's ever done it. I don't know if it was my first or second time up. I grounded out to first, so I was thrown out at first. My second time up, I hit a line drive over first, around the first, slid in the second, they threw me out. So I was out at second. Then I hit a double, try to make it a triple, thrown out at third. And I will never forget, I hit a ball in the gap somewhere. I'm rounding second, I round third, and my legs just died
gave out.
On me. So I got thrown out at home. I got thrown out
at every base. That's a remarkable achievement.
And during that same spring training, we were playing the Giants. Ed Runge was the umpire. Juan Marichal was pitching, and they pointed me to first base. And Ed Runge pointed me. Nobody knew what was happening. They were trying to change baseball rules. They pointed me to first base. And then they said, what a ridiculous
rule that.
But I'm the first and only one ever pointed to first base during a major league game, spring training.
Trying to see if we just don't throw the four intentional pitches and speed up the game. And they did it with you.
For me to
do it. That's remarkable. Richie, it's been wonderful catching up with you, sir. And on behalf of Cleveland Indians fans everywhere, we wish you and yours the very, very best.
Thank you so much. I can't tell you how excited I am to see all my old friends here. And we find out that you don't just become a teammate, you become family.
Beautiful. Richie Scheinblum, our latest Tribe Tale.
This is all right here. Who's got the fans? So much.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Tribe Talk. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will join you next weekend from Minneapolis. The Indians will take on the Twins. How about that? That's a key series now. Who would have thought that in the offseason, that a series in June between the Indians and the Twins would be a battle for the top spot in the American League Central Division, but it very well could be by the time we reach next weekend. And the Indians, again, will be on the road in Minneapolis. That's where Tribe Talk will air from. So until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Clinic Indians Radio Network.